My topic tonight is the bright guardians of the world. That's what the Buddha called it. Sometimes we've done something wrong and we know it, and we feel like we're living with a police officer inside of us. It puts us on edge, but we may not really understand that we're suffering or why. That's often the nature of dukkha, because it's encased in ignorance about it to some extent or another. In my youth, back in the Middle Ages, most offices had walls devoted to cubbyholes where important things were filed, where they were easy to access. And our minds are like that. We have some cubbyholes that we share with most other human beings. There are two cubbyholes in our minds that do keep us a bit on edge sometimes. They are like cops that live with us all the time, wherever we go. Sometimes we think that all cops are bad, but not these, when you understand them. These mental cubbyholes can serve us well. They've been translated from Pali words, hiri and otapa, as shame and guilt. Part of how they work is why we will yell shame, shame, shame at powerful people who've done terrible things. We're mad at them, for one thing, and we want them to feel shame. The feeling of shame and guilt may be the only punishment that their bad deeds get. It may keep them from doing it again. And most importantly, it broadcasts to society as a whole that behavior like theirs will not go unnoticed. Just look at the Me Too movement. It's been incredibly powerful. It's one of the most abrupt cultural pivots in history, and definitely the most influential in my memory. It was like I looked away for a moment, and all of a sudden, everything I'd been working for half a century happened. What this Me Too movement did, and the shame and guilt that it focused on men who had misbehaved, well, people in general, it took away from people in power, usually men, the privilege to abuse others, usually women, without having any consequences. It gave women much more protection and power to not have to put up with abuse from people or organizations that are capable of being shame. I have always been fascinated by the way cultures regulate the behavior of their members. I almost got a PhD in it. Law is an important way to maintain order. But police and judges can't be on hand all the time. And even if they were, they might not be entirely honorable. So there have to be other ways for the rules to be communicated to people and enforced. Parents teach the rules, usually, but sometimes it's by negative example. A parent who's always in trouble can vividly demonstrate the lines that we're supposed to not cross. We also learn rules from peers, the media, and many others in this really highly communicative society. Rules can be taught and enforced either gently or harshly, like by the carrot or the stick. When I realized that I wanted to live a spiritual life, I encountered some lists of rules. It took me a while to fully accept them. And now that I've paid close attention to them for decades, they're almost like a natural part of how my mind works. It's really reduced the times I feel the sting of shame or guilt. The first time I attempted something like a Buddhist retreat, it was at the posh guest house at Green Gulch, and it's a long drive out there. And on the way, I realized that I was really nervous because I didn't know the rules. I was frightened of inadvertently doing or saying something outrageous, a gaffe, you might call it. Finally, I said to myself, oh, relax. They're Buddhists. They're not going to be unkind. Still, there's something inside me that yearns to live honorably and meet the approval of others. All my study indicates that this is universal, with the exception of people who seem to have no conscience or shame or fear of the consequences of what they do. Now, for several decades now, shame and guilt have had a mostly negative connotation in our culture. Once when I was working at Zen Hospice, I made a mistake, and I admitted that was bad. Some experienced practitioner told me, no, don't feel guilty. But after thinking about it a little, I said, yeah, no, I don't feel guilty, but I need to know when I do something wrong so I won't do it again. And this is exactly what the point is of the Pali words Hiri and Otapa and the teachings about them. The Buddha called these mental capacities the bright guardians of the world. It's hard for me not to feel uplifted when I hear that phrase. And that's far from the way I usually felt before I undertook to live according to Buddhist ethics. Most of my life, I experienced shame and guilt as a form of self-hatred. And there are countless books and public speakers who think of guilt as a kind of psychological rot. But imagine a society where no one had either of these moral compasses. Would you want to expose your life, your loved ones, your daily endeavors to people like that? Together, Hiri and Otapa, shame and guilt, function as your conscience. Now that's a word for them together that's still respected, the bright guardian of the world. Hiri comes from our sense of honor, our respect for ourselves and others. It's a form of love for the person whom our deeds have fashioned over the course of our lives. Yes, there are actions we regret. We often hesitate to remember them and hope they remain private, not exposed to public view. Or perhaps we've taken steps to cure those deeds by making amends to the people affected by them. That often means exposing what we did, at least to those people. It takes humility to do that. It shows the character of a person who becomes willing to atone for their misdeeds. This is someone with integrity. This is someone able to love themselves enough to do what it takes to keep their conscience clear. They're able to care enough about others and themselves to make amends and avoid doing hurtful things in the future. That's the goodness that comes from shame and guilt. But have you been waiting for the but? I have. But the goodness of Hiri and Otapa comes from seeing them not as sticks, but as carrots. In the sutta called the conch trumpet, or in Pali, the Sankha Sutta, the Buddha explained to the follower of a different religion that past misconduct doesn't have to condemn us forever. Karma is not indelible. The Buddha used the example of someone who breaks a precept, perhaps by stealing. And that person might say to themselves, that was not right. That was not good. But if I just become remorseful, that evil deed of mine will not be undone. In other words, shame and guilt are important guides to our conduct, but they alone don't cure what we've done wrong. The hypothetical person in the sutta recognized this and right then resolved to change their ways. This, says the sutta, is how evil deeds are abandoned. This is how they're transcended. What those books and professional speakers criticize is the effect of getting stuck in shame and guilt. In this inactive form, shame and guilt are worse than worthless. When we're stuck in them, they become corrosive. Remorse and self-criticism do not by themselves undo what we've done. But as active forces, when Hiri and Otapa motivate us to act with integrity, they shine. They move us ahead on the path. The Conch Trumpet Sutta goes on to discuss every ethical precept and how by training the mind with the aid of Hiri and Otapa, one becomes devoid of ill will and acquires the wise understanding that begins the Eightfold Path. When we deeply study things we've done that trouble our conscience, it offers us a priceless lesson about dukkha. It shows us very clearly what suffering is and how it's caused, both for ourselves and for others. Studying shame and guilt reassures us that the suffering that we've caused can be ended. We don't have to carry that guilt of our past misdeeds around with us or continue to do them in the future. We can stop causing dukkha. We can live with a spotless conscience. When we closely observe our thinking about our conduct like this, it leads to a broader perspective, which the Sutta calls an awareness imbued with goodwill, abundant, enlarged, immeasurable, without hostility, without ill will. In other words, our every deed becomes guided by metta. We live with compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, keenly aware of our connection to all living beings. We see how we intersect with this planet and the universe in which it moves. Now that's a big carrot. The moments when we have this awareness are filled with a joy that explodes our sense of a limited self separate from others. Willingly harming others becomes inconceivable. Every moment guided by kindness is happiness. How do we get to this mental state? By following our conscience, which actually is, in positive terms, metta. When we deny this bright possibility and see Hiri and Otapa only as bad cops, we grab the stick and not the carrot. We just batter ourselves with that stick, causing more dukkha. If we stop this self-punishment by firing our moral police, we end up living in a kind of anarchy where nothing really matters and we have no sense of honor or integrity. Worst of all, we feel no real link to others, just in isolation without real love. Instead, we can choose to pay attention to our conscience, close attention, We can study past actions that don't feel right from the point of view of the Four Noble Truths. Was there suffering? Did our conduct cause it? Can it be ended? How? As the Kanch Sutta proclaims, that study produces wise view. The Kanch Trumpet Sutta says that this mental state, imbued with loving kindness, reaches in all directions, just like the sound of a trumpet, undoing all the suffering of all misdeeds to all beings, past, present, and future. Ultimately, we can live in harmony with our internal good cops, our shining guardian of the world. Now, it's unthinkable that I could end this discussion of conscience and good or bad cops at this point, after this week's historic event. A bad cop was brought to justice for murdering a black man. Finally. After many centuries and countless victims, our justice system finally worked for a black man killed by a bad cop in broad daylight in front of a crowd that videotaped every 9 minutes and 29 seconds of his murder. My wife and I laughed and cried when we heard the verdict. Guilty, guilty, guilty. But it took such an outrageous incident for there to even be a trial. And we weren't confident there would be a conviction. Too often we have seen America just go on without any conscience about how people of color are treated. Finally, in these extreme circumstances, the people who marched by tens of thousands all over the country and all over the world, and a dedicated legal team, that's what it took to finally achieve justice. And then there were no riots, just peaceful, tearful celebration. When I was in high school in the 1960s, I competed in original oratory, a one-hour speech that I researched, wrote, and delivered about the reasons why what had been the civil rights movement became the Black Power movement, which for the first time overtly expressed the rage felt by African Americans. At the time, there were riots going on all over this country, including some of the venues where I went to deliver this speech. That speech explained why this was happening by telling the history of America's crimes against black people. It's a long and sordid story, which I told with vivid examples of enslavement, torture, rape, and lynching. So many generations living without any rights, without justice or economic opportunities. It's been 400 years that blacks have had no recourse against the power structure that rules their lives. On Tuesday, April 20th, we saw the first opening of that wall between people of color and justice. May that wall continue to crumble. May all Black, Indigenous, and people of color come to wake up each day without fearing the random cruelty of white people. This is a matter of conscience for us all. We need to hear and reject the voice inside that tells us this is a task for others to assume, that we're personally powerless. We're not. We are responsible. We need to listen with metta to the voice inside that says it is up to us to do all we can to keep American culture changing, to overcome racism. First, we need to examine our own consciences about systemic racism. If we haven't studied Black history or taken a course in white supremacy, now would be a good time. Let yourself feel the shame and guilt of what white America has done to people of color. And then work for change by keeping faith with your conscience, the bright guardians of the world. Thank you.